Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast, the place to be for six, seven and eight figure sellers in the UK, especially, and of course in Europe. And Europe it is that we're going to focus on today. And we are welcoming Augustus Cleggis to the show, who is becoming very well known for creating some really great events in Europe, particularly in the less well-served places like Central and Eastern Europe. So really interesting, different topic. Augustus, welcome to the show.
Hello, Michael. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Excellent. So there's lots of events in America, of course, for Amazon sellers, and quite a few in London in the UK, and famously also sometimes in Germany as well. But it seems like there's quite an interesting set of stuff emerging from different parts of Europe. Particularly, there are some very famous names like Traian Tucu, I guess, is the best known Romanian seller. I've met quite a few successful Romanian sellers, for example. So very interested to talk about this topic, the different mindsets you get from European Amazon sellers. So just give us an overview. What would you say are the similarities and the differences between, say, American sellers, UK sellers, and some of the guys that you've had on your seller conferences?
So, yeah, first of all, at the moment in 2019, I started to create live events, in-person conferences for Amazon sellers. At the moment, in 2019, I will accomplish four events in four different countries. Why I'm doing all this is because I want to bring all these Amazon seller communities together. And I think in Europe, it's much more difficult to bring them, especially in the small countries. So let's say if United States has a big market for conferences and big amount of Amazon sellers, for them, it's easy to come in the same country to an event on the other side of the United States, let's say. But in Europe, you need to, every country has its own has its own culture, and it's kind of isolated. Every, let's say, Romanian sellers, they usually communicate between Romanian sellers. Lithuanian, I'm from Lithuania, so Lithuanians are usually between themselves. And I took a challenge to kind of unite these kind of people from different countries. And I know that Europeans are usually excited to go to another country and meet other nationalities. And from this, obviously, I believe comes some kind of you find different perspectives, how different people in different countries, they see the same thing. When I talk about, let's say, different perspectives in different countries, I very often use the very extreme example. When I was 20 years ago visiting China, and when I came back from that country after 3 weeks of traveling, I was describing this country in one sentence. So basically, if we put in the middle of the room a round table, you and me would probably will say it's a round table. But Chinese, let's say, would say it is an ellipse table, like ellipse shape. And we both, all of us, will be right. It is just how the perspective, how you look at it. So if you look at the table from the side, of course, it's an ellipse. So this is how I want to describe these cultural differences sometimes, which brings new perspectives. This was, of course, I'm not getting many participants or attendees from China in my events in Europe, but this is what also is happening in a minor scale, like in micro kind of understandings and discoveries when two different nationality people meet in the same room. So basically, especially I think in Europe, it's a big difference can be between Eastern Europeans and Western Europeans. We were grown in different mindsets. I think Eastern Europeans are going through more budget, less expensive, let's say, services, or they have mindset of things being cheap and so on. In Western Europe, maybe they are more willing to invest more money and looking for quality. So these kind of minds, when they come together, I think it's possible to that there is something new will come out of this kind of cooperation and communication.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting. I mean, it's kind of going against the trend. And in Britain, obviously, we're suffering with, well, I say suffering, I think we're suffering from this whole Brexit paralysis, which is a bit like, you know, America's dealing with Trump. It's the kind of thing that seems like a bad Hollywood movie that nobody would think realistic 10 years ago or even five. But you seem to be going the opposite way, which is not only about Europeans discovering each other, but the Eastern Europe and Western Europe, which is still obviously, it was only, I remember like 1989 and when the wall started coming down, it's, you know, for somebody at my age, I'm 45, that is not that long ago that it seemed like a completely different universe. And I guess there are still differences. There are a lot of similarities now as well. And there's a lot of wealth that has grown in the Eastern part of Europe. But of course, they've had very, very different experiences politically and economically for generations. And then, of course, there's whatever traditions of a part of Slavic or Baltic cultures or Balkan culture are going to be very different from, you know, Western Europe as well in some ways, and I have been for centuries. So let's get into that then. Tell me, what would you say in a nutshell are some of the differences that you've experienced between, let's say, if you were within Europe, between, if you count the UK as part of Europe, between British sellers, who I know you've met because we met originally in London, and some of the Eastern European sellers that you know?
Yeah, it's quite difficult, of course, to compare just like this straight, but I can imagine that, let's say, British people might have little disadvantage because maybe most of the time they speak just one language, and other people from other countries, even Germans, you will often find a German speaking German and English. So it's two languages. Whenever you speak several languages, I understand five languages. So it makes the world much, how to say, bigger, more, you see more possibilities. Let's say when I hear someone speaking in Spanish and I understand it, it opens up. Of course, and you can receive in that language the information which is people talking in that language sharing. So I think this is the difference that maybe, let's say, whenever already you speak more languages than one, you might have certain advantage in, I cannot prove or show any kind of statistics or scientific, but I can imagine that it does help in entrepreneurship when you speak multiple languages, not because of the language, but just because your brain has a little bit different structure to receive this information from outside world.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm one of those unusual Brits that I agree most British people are god-awful at languages and they don't seem to have any incentive to learn it. Now, I can understand Americans being bad at foreign languages because English and Spanish will cover, you know, an entire continent, whereas Britain is 35 miles or like 50 kilometers or whatever from France, and yet most English people speak awful French. I say this is my mum and my grandmother were French teachers, so I guess that I have a certain kind of knowledge of French, and my German's pretty fluent. So I do think it makes a difference. I agree. I mean, for example, I've sold to Germany and I was able to do my own translations. But not only that, I could do keyword research in German and understand what it meant. But also, I guess I have a sense of German culture because having lived out there, I have a sense that they really value quality. You know, you were talking about the quality versus price thing, that Germans value quality more than Brits do, I think. And Brits are being very Americanized so that they are more into consumer culture where you buy stuff today and throw it away tomorrow. Germans, of course, are part of that culture. They are there, sell more on Amazon in Germany than anywhere else in the planet except the USA. But yeah, I certainly think it gives you a feeling for how they're going to react to, you know, for example, a problem with a product and the right sort of way to handle somebody. So I guess that's quite specific, isn't it? But yeah, I agree with the language thing.
Yeah, I think this extra, for example, even you don't speak German and you sell in Germany, it means you have to have, let's say, extra costs from the beginning because you might want to hire a translator of all the messages which customers are sending. You can do it alone, but if you receive a message in German and then you will translate with, let's say, automatic translations online, then maybe you will not feel confident to respond with this automatic translation to your customer. Then you will have to, like, there might be some delays in responding messages just because you will realize that you cannot provide service 100% with 100% quality. And actually, I had a good example in my experience recently. I was organizing Amazon Seller Conference in Israel, which was called SellerFest Israel. I didn't realize how difficult it is to create an event where you don't, and I cannot even read that language, Hebrew language. Luckily, I had a partner who was from Israel, so I could do a lot of things through him, but basically I was relying on marketing. I was relying on him when it was about marketing the event, because I couldn't really like read what he's, I could just translate with automatic translations what he's posting, and I couldn't help him to write something, because if I write him in English, there will be a delay in translating, and we didn't have like systems in place to translate efficiently and quickly. And so there was a big challenge for me to organize an event in Israel. At the end, it was, people were happy, but I can affirm that probably even if you're an Amazon seller and selling in five different language marketplaces, there will be like this kind of maybe delays or mental blocks not to expand in Spain just because you don't speak the language. And it's, of course, minimizes the opportunities.
I think you put your finger on it, actually. I don't think it's necessarily a problem that you don't speak German to sell into Germany if you're British. I think the problem is two things. The problem is what you, I'll put it this way. I think what you think is the problem isn't, and what you don't even know exists is a big problem. So for most British people or Americans, particularly, let's say, selling into Europe, and let's say British people, because it's just over the English Channel, or whatever you call it, you know, La Manche. If you're French, not English Channel. as you said, two different perspectives on the same thing. But if you are at the moment in the European Union, you can have inventory in the UK and you can try out Germany with almost no risk. So it's crazy not to do it. But the mental barrier created by the fact that it's in a foreign language and you're going to have to hire a translator is the big thing, I think, because actually it's not hard to hire a translator. You just get on with it. I've spoken to three, you know, in the last week, two of them for the podcast, not in the last week, but three in the last month, I should say. So there's lots and lots of people who do a very, very good job and it's quite affordable. I think the problem is not the thing that you think is a problem, but it's that if you are American and you just translate American sales copy, you're going to sound like a raving lunatic to Germans because they don't have the same culture. And the same would be true if you go into Japan. So that's, I think, a more subtle thing, which is cultural difference, which I think, again, is a really interesting thing, because as you implied, in Europe, we have a small space with just a massive variety of cultures. So let's talk a bit more about that. I'm interested in particularly the Eastern European and Central European experience, because we hear very little about that. What do you have to say on the sort of cultural differences either of the consumers in those countries or of the sellers and entrepreneurs in those countries who sell in e-commerce?
As I mentioned earlier, I think Eastern Europeans might be still looking for a cheap, because it might be coming from a Soviet Union mentality, Soviet mentality, when we had no many resources, we had no money, and everything was controlled. So basically, even now, I know one image product photographer who serves Amazon sellers in Lithuania. He's, of course, doing photography for other things as well, but he says that Lithuanian Amazon sellers don't want, they are like scared or they run away when he tells the price for the product photography, because he knows how much work it is to make images and he wants to make a, you know, good quality results. But for people, they imagine it should be like twice cheaper, maybe not maybe 700 euros, but just 200 or 300 euros for a few photos. So people don't understand that you have to pay for the quality. I think it can be in many Eastern European countries, this kind of issue. I don't say that all the sellers are like this. Obviously, there are people who realized that quality should go first and then the price. But this is the main kind of maybe difference or speciality in Eastern Europe, which comes to my mind at the moment.
So, Augustus, I know that you've been running these events for quite a while. So tell us a little bit more about your events and what kind of things you do at your events, what sort of topics you cover, you know, what's it all about?
Yeah, so I jumped into this industry about 3 years ago with a first virtual summit for Amazon sellers. And since then, I did six virtual summits. And this year, in 2019, I started to do in-person conferences. And I did two conferences, one in Prague and another in Israel. And it was a mix of different topics. So basically, I think it's very usual that the conference, when you attend for specifically designed for Amazon sellers, you expect mix of different topics. Some conferences might be targeting beginners, some might be more expensive, targeting more high rollers, big sellers. So this is what I'm also doing. I'm targeting intermediate sellers who know the basics about Amazon, but they are looking for the next step information, next level information, and with the pricing I'm offering, of course, I'm attracting like intermediate sellers. However, I'm about to make another event, which will be in Amsterdam, which is called PPC Congress. It's happening in the beginning of October. And in this event, we will be talking only about Amazon advertising. I think it will be first of its kind event in the industry. I haven't seen that there was a conference about Amazon advertising only. There are conferences about different kinds of advertising, like Google or maybe Facebook advertising. But in Amazon niche, there was nothing like this. So I'm bringing like the best, the most respectful minds in the advertising industry. And I hope this event will be successful. And I do hope that with this event, I will attract not only Amazon sellers who are just looking maybe to party and to learn a little bit, also a lot of agencies which are helping much more Amazon sellers privately with the PPC management. So I do hope that a lot of Amazon agencies will see promotion of this event and they will be attracted to come and join, because I think it's specifically designed for them, because for 2 days they will be learning only about advertising, and this is what they do every day to earn money. So basically, I'm mixing up. I'm also trying to serve different regions. That's why I did the event in Israel, where I was surprised that there are not so many events for Amazon sellers in Israel, especially with the international speakers. And this is what we did with a partner. And we brought, I think, more than 10, maybe 12 speakers from different countries. I'm doing another event in Lithuania, my home country, in September. And there I managed to attract 14 different speakers, and none of them are from Lithuania, and from 9 different countries. So from US, from UK, from Canada, from Serbia, from Poland. So it will be interesting event in the very small country. So this is, I'm just trying to bring something new in the industry, something new to the countries where they don't have events. And let's see what happens.
Yeah, let's see what happens. I quite like it. So you kind of putting the event on and see what happens. It's not a bad idea, actually. I think sometimes people who put on events get a bit obsessed with the idea that you've got to sell a very specific kind of training or something. And that makes sense from a marketing perspective, because actually you will get people coming along if you offer some magic bullet. Even people who I think should be more grown up than that will pay, you know, $10,000 to fly to Las Vegas to go and hear about a magic bullet. I've yet to speak to one who thought that was a good investment, frankly, but maybe it is occasionally. But what I think is more interesting is that you're putting the right kinds of people together and then seeing what happens. And actually, obviously, and the speakers will have specific topics they took on, but the conference as a whole, apart from your PPC Congress, it sounds like it's just as much about putting people from different cultures together and seeing what results. Because I think you're right, those almost random encounters you have between different people can be very insightful, I think. I mean, we've got a couple of guys. There's a Dutch guy in our Million Pound Mastermind. He flies over and he's got really quite a different perspective on Amazon, because he sells a lot on bol.com, which is a you know, big Dutch e-commerce platform, but that's not big outside Holland. So it gives you a different perspective on e-commerce, for example. So that's very interesting that you're doing that. So tell me a bit more about the PPC Congress. As you say, the first of its kind, it sounds like it's a major topic now. And obviously, yes, there are lots of agencies now. Suddenly, everyone in the world, having done SaaS, as in software as a service, is an obsession, is now obsessed with offering agencies for some reason. So there are a lot of PPC agencies. We have like about 4 or 5 that we've got interviewed or had interviews with for the 10K Collective podcast. So what kind of people are you going to be bringing in for that conference?
In the PPC Congress, I want to attract basically three types of people or companies. It's, of course, Amazon sellers, and then agencies, and also softwares. And in order to do that, I'm bringing also interesting speakers who would not only be talking about, let's say, PPC strategies and all these traditional things you would expect in such conference, but also I will have a slot specifically for, again, for agencies to where I have three speakers, Danny McMillan, Michael Hartman, and Liran Hirschkorn, who will be sharing their experience in building the agency. They will be answering questions about how to select your clients, how to fire the clients, how to charge high ticket for your clients. And this is, I think, which can be very interesting and have... It's rare you can learn in the conferences. And besides, of course, the special slot for agencies, there will be speakers like Brian Johnson, Franz Jordan from Celix, Stefano Starkel from Zone.Tools. There will be coming a lady. At the moment, I have just one lady on the list of speakers. It's Liz Martin Adamson. She is quite known in the advertising industry from, I think she's a smart lady. So let's see what she will be sharing with us. And then I have a little bit less known names, but whenever I was confirming speakers, I literally was asking two, three or sometimes four of my friends the opinion of the speaker who is applying to speak. So I'm trying to be very, very selective and very can be difficult for an unknown person to go through and stand on the stage. But at the same time, I cannot risk to put a total beginner on the stage and to then people have a bad, you know, bad experience listening to him.
Yeah, so you've got to be selective. Well, it sounds like you've got quite an interesting mix, particularly as you say about running an agency and getting an insight into that, because more and more of the sellers around that are doing well tend to run agencies, and why not? It's another form of income stream. So talking of which then, let's just have a quick chat. I mean, it's not relevant for most Amazon sellers yet, but it might be for those who already run agencies who are listening, and doubtless there are a few people out there. So hello, guys, and come on the podcast by all means. It's a good place to get exposure. Talking about organizing events, because obviously you're organizing, suddenly you've gone from virtual events to organizing five, because you Prague, Israel, Lithuania, and four, right, in 1 year, which seems like a lot to me. So tell me about that. I mean, what are the sort of pros and cons of that as a way of making a living?
So basically, the first thing which I'm putting in my mind, or my goal, is to serve people, to help them in some way. So I'm not really putting down the calculation, monetary calculation at the beginning when I am planning a new event. But indeed, the very first event was European Seller Conference in Prague in March 2019. And for this event, mentally, I was preparing 2 years in advance. And in the production of this event was happening for 8 or 9 months, a lot of planning, because I had to learn a lot of different steps related to event organizing. Whenever this event finished, my first thought, and even now I have this thought, that to create an event, it's easy. To create a conference is really easy. The only thing which makes me difficult is that every event has like 200 micro tasks. So you have to somehow remember, and I'm still learning to create some kind of system or structure to remember all these small tasks, not to forget to order lanyards, not to forget to send reminders to speakers, not to forget to inform speakers about VIP dinner, and all this 200, I don't know exact number, but I can imagine it's 200 for each event, can make you crazy if you don't have a good assistant who can help you. And this is at the moment, my strategy, like PPC Congress, for example, is organized. I have an event organizer for this, so I don't have to think much about the venue and how it will be set up. I just have to approve possible solutions. And this year I'm doing 4 events. So it was in Prague, it was in Israel, and 2 more upcoming in Lithuania and Amsterdam. And next year I will repeat Prague in March, but also in January I'm planning Seller Fest USA. So I decided to step into USA market earlier than I expected, and everything is actually happening earlier than I expected. I didn't really realize that I can make four events in one calendar year, but it's happening. And as I say, it's whenever you repeat the same, you know, the same process, it's looks okay. It's easy. Of course, it's a lot of work, but I'm learning to outsource and to put some systems. And once it's done, I think we can bring a lot of value and happiness to people. It's really what is rewarding is seeing people happy and sending positive feedback after the event.
I like that. I bring a lot of happiness. That's not sort of something that, you know, the net happiness of the world is not normally a metric that most Amazon sellers talk about. So that's really nice. I mean, just tell us a little bit more about the outsourcing of the process then, because obviously it sounds like you're in the middle of creating your systems and processes. But presumably if you manage to create four events in 1 year, you have managed to systematize things really quite well. I mean, presumably, I know you have a background as a sort of computer programmer and developer. So I guess that probably helps with being structured, right? But tell us a little bit more about how you've managed to handle those, you know, micro tasks and how you've got that a bit more organized over the last year.
Yeah, I'm still learning. And actually every day recently, I have a thought like maybe for each separate event, I should have a separate event manager who works every year on that event, which would be much, much easier, because my specialty or my challenge is that my events are in different countries. And maybe next year, some of them will repeat. And when you do in different countries, there are a lot of complications, language, VAT, and all these things. So when I was preparing the first event in Prague, I hired a Czech native assistant. I found her on Upwork. I know how hard it is to hire people. Probably you also experienced these challenges when you try to select that your team member. And I was lucky to get
100%. Yeah.
I was lucky to get the first person, which was like really perfect. Recently, I hired an assistant, which is native, not native, but she's Lithuanian. She's from my home country. And I find it, it's quite much easier to communicate in my own language, even though the whole work she's doing is in English. She's checking, you know, writing English blog posts. But it's much, much easier when I can communicate to my team member in my own language, even though in English I'm fluent, but still somehow there is this relief. So maybe it's also a tip, like if you can hire, at least from my experience, to hire a person in your own language. Otherwise, yeah, I think sometimes you might be challenged and it can take a lot of time to find a good person to take over your tasks. It's maybe more times failure than success.
Yeah, I've just been going through that. I had a team meeting before this call and we were just talking about, you know, the possibility of getting another VA on board from the Philippines. But again, it's an interesting thing. I mean, just to sort of bring this home, but this is maybe links up with what we were saying earlier in the episode about more the sort of selling experience either of the consumers on Amazon or other e-commerce marketplaces or of the people who sell on them. I think for me, there are differences between Europeans, but what's interesting to me is there's also a lot more similarities than you think until you go outside Europe. I mean, somehow there are some weird cultural barriers with the Filipinos who normally speak pretty decent English, or it's American English, although they can seem quite breezy and almost like quite Americanized, and they're lovely, and that the ones they're almost all polite and really nice, and some of them incredibly hardworking, very efficient indeed. In fact, as we speak, I've got a Filipino VA repairing something that I broke in one of my systems online, and he's more organized than I am about it, and he's fantastic. So I'm not saying they're not good, but there is a thing of taking initiative and having a sort of common sense, if you like, that I find with East Europeans, when I've hired people on Upwork from places like Serbia, for example, that even though obviously it's a long way from the UK and it's a very different language, but it's still Europe and they still have things like initiative and they kind of think for themselves more than I found in the Philippines. And I find that that's quite interesting to contrast those forms of outsourcing, even though, of course, it's not the same language, it's not the same culture, but that I find that there is a sort of European common culture, which I wasn't really aware of until, you know, I work with Americans who are quite similar, but have a bit even more initiative sometimes. And then the people in the Far East who generally want you to tell them exactly what to do and don't want to make mistakes. But can be very, very precise as well. So have you any experiences of hiring VAs in the Philippines? Is it always Europe that you hire people?
If I'm hiring people in Europe?
Yeah. Or do you sometimes hire people in the Philippines or outsource to other countries?
Yeah. About 1 year ago when I was really burned out and I said, okay, now I need an assistant, I went to Philippines. And actually, with the first selection, I was really lucky. It was a great guy, but whenever I asked him to work not 100, but 160 hours per month, he started to find excuses why he cannot do that. Maybe his health was an issue. Maybe he had to help his mother. And at the end, I had to fire him just because he couldn't make more than I needed. But I had good experience with Filipino, just that he didn't stick. And then I tried another Filipino lady. She looked like she's working two times slower than the other guy, so I fired her again. And at the end, I found a Czech assistant from Czech Republic for my conference, which was really great. And at that time, I think I realized that probably I want to work with Europeans. That's why I found at the moment assistant from my own country. And I would outsource maybe to like these faraway countries some kind of technical, let's say data collection only, or video editing, because video editing can be very time consuming. And maybe it's better to pay, let's say, $5 or $6 per hour than in, let's say, Asian country than 20 euros per hour in European country, because depends if your videos don't bring much monetary value, then better. I think to outsource this kind of technical or monotonic things, which can be clear for the person to, let's say, if there is a video template they have to apply for every video cut, then it's clear and they can do it kind of like, without additional supervision. But whenever it's more creative tasks, I would probably use Europeans, because this mindset is much closer to ours, to mine, let's say. It's much easier to communicate. Also, sometimes time zone plays a difference.
Yeah, I was going to say, there can be advantages, but for example, I normally have a team meeting 2 p.m. UK time, because I've got a very small team for the podcast, but for some reason I've managed to put people at the opposite ends of the earth. So I've got an American who's excellent and been with me about 3 years now, fantastic guy, Daniel, who, if you're listening, Daniel, once again, my grateful thanks for all your work, my friend, but he is seven time zones behind me. And then or maybe six. And then I got the Filipino guys in seven time zones ahead. So it really does make it difficult. But also what I really liked about, I can sometimes work with East European developers. In fact, somebody you put me onto, now I think of it, Augustus. So he's like one time zone ahead. So if I message him at a time that makes sense for me, normally he can respond straight away because he's also working. So yes, it does make life a lot simpler. So this is not a sort of prejudice or saying people should or shouldn't hire Filipinos or anywhere else in the globe. I mean, I've got Filipino VAs, I've hired Europeans, I've got an American, he works, as I say. But in the end, I think it's a very neglected area for some reason, because most of the podcasts are in internet marketing and virtual everything generally, including Amazon, are led by Americans. Everyone's obsessed with the Philippines, and it can be very good. But it's only one option. And I say, look closer to home. It is a good value option. Also, I would say that everyone assumes that Europe's expensive and Asia is cheap. And actually, good VAs, in my experience, go up, put their prices up quite quickly. This VA in the Philippines that I worked with last year for $5 an hour now wants $8 an hour. Whereas there's two or three countries in Eastern Europe which have very low living costs, but the people are excellent. So I do think it is a good place to look for value. I would really say that. Particularly Serbia, actually. I found some really great Serbian guys for like $3, $4 an hour. Really was amazed. So yes, this is a sort of pro-European episode somehow, without trying to be. Have you got any sort of final parting thoughts on, first of all, let's give you a bit of a plug spot. Tell people why they should turn up to your PPC Congress in Amsterdam in October.
So yeah, PPC Congress, more information you can find on ppccongress.com. It's happening in Amsterdam, October 3rd and 4th. The pricing is very, I think, intermediate. It should be affordable to Amazon sellers, which get the cheapest tickets. And then for agencies, it's a little bit more expensive, just a little bit. because I guess they will get a lot of value through this during this event. And also, besides the sellers and agencies, there will be a few software providers who will be to whom you can just talk for 2 days straight and see how they do their optimization algorithms and see if it's a good fit. So basically, if you're interested in PPC topic, Amazon advertising, it's the right place to be. There is no other event like this. And it's happening in Europe. So if you're listening from Europe, it's just, especially from London, it is just 50 minutes flight to Amsterdam.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, somehow, if you watch the news in Britain, sometimes you get the impression that America was 30 miles away and France was 5,000 miles away. And we kind of forget. I mean, yes, they may speak different languages, but apart from anything, the Dutch, along with, you know, maybe Lithuanians that I've met, tend to speak like five languages really well. So they put us to shame. But also, it's incredibly quick to get there. It's probably quicker for me to get from here in London to Amsterdam than it would be for me to get from here to north of England. I mean, it really is that quick. So yes, I agree. It's around the corner. And obviously, you have the advantage of being unique in the sense that nobody else is doing any PPC Congress, I should say. It's basically, it was waiting to happen, and you're the man who made it happen. So I won't be able to be there myself because we're going to be off doing other things, but it's certainly going to be a great event. And the last question then is really, have you got any sort of tips for anyone who wants to get better at selling in Europe? Are there any sort of tips that you think somebody from outside, like the US or Australia or the Canadians, need to be aware of as a generalization about Europe? It's a really difficult question to answer, but I'm going to answer it anyway because it's an interesting topic.
Yes, I think there might be mostly kind of mental blocks, which the word we used a few times in this episode, but something which, let's say, there is a language barrier and a person from Australia or US might think, oh, okay, I will not do it for now. I will wait until I'm big in US, let's say, or in Australia, and then I will jump into Europe. Or they might be challenged with finding out information about taxes. And I would suggest, of course, it will cost money, but maybe just to invest into service provider who can do implement these challenges for you, can sort out the different language listings and also to sort you out with the taxes. And I think it will pay off long term. So basically, the message is, like some people say, just to take action and not to be afraid or not to believe in your mental blocks. I would say like this, this is what helps me to not be afraid of 4 live events in 1 year. Maybe next year will be 6 live events. It's 1 year ago, if you would ask me how many conferences I will do next year, I would say like maximum 2 conferences. But now I'm doing 4 in 1 year. And it's just because I started not to be afraid of this risk, which I'm taking every time I create a new event. And I think this should be the same mindset for Amazon sellers. You just have to take a risk and maybe invest a little bit more to solve the challenges you see in front of you.
Excellent. Well, it seems like the Americans don't have a monopoly on the can-do attitude. He would have thought that such a can-do statement from Europe. So, Augustus, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about your events. And again, if you want to check out the PPC Congress, guys, ppccongress.com. Sounds like a great event. Obviously, PPC is going to become more and more important as Amazon favors it more and more over all the other sort of marketing and traffic strategies broadly. So it's something we've got to get right. So a great excuse to go to Amsterdam, which is a beautiful, beautiful city as well. So highly recommended. Augustus, many thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Michael. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.